Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Beautiful people, welcome to this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I hope you all are doing well out there. I hope you had a solid weekend. But for Michigan State fans, I know it was tough. I know it was tough because, look, you know, I've been saying all year, since the Mel Tucker hire and since COVID hit especially, that Mel could come in as the head coach, first-year head coach of this Michigan State football team, not win a game in his first season, and he would get a pass. I said that. And he will, and he would. You know, if Michigan State was the only, you know, was to win no game, let's just go worst-case scenario here, Mel Tucker would get a pass because of all of the circumstances that surround his hire, and, you know, with it being the year of COVID as well. But I don't think anyone, and I do mean anyone out there, no one believed that Michigan State was going to put out the performance. No one predicted that kind of performance from the Spartans against Rutgers. A Rutgers team that historically has been in the basement of the Big Ten for a while. Playing a Michigan State squad that many believe to be much more talented. But all of that went out the window on Saturday. And Greg Schiano may have something here with Rutgers. Let's hope. Because if they don't, and they prove to be the same Rutgers of old, we'll look back at this Michigan State game against Rutgers and say, man, this team is horrible. They snapped a 21-game conference losing streak. And speaking of 21, Michigan State's home opening loss to Rutgers snapped a home season opener streak, win streak of 21 for Michigan State football. So Rutgers snaps that 21-game conference losing streak with that 38-27 win. We'll be all over that on today's Current Sports. Again, I will further elaborate on my thoughts and what a shellacking like that says about Michigan State football moving forward now to rivalry game week, a Halloween afternoon matchup between Michigan State and Michigan out in A-squared. How does Michigan State stop the bleeding? What must they improve on? And right now, have you guys seen the opening line out in Las Vegas for this game? If you haven't, I'll just say it's not pretty for the Spartans. All right, I'll give you the exact number in just a moment. So we'll be talking all things Michigan State and Rutgers. We'll roll in a bit of the Mel Tucker press conference. What did Mel Tucker exactly have to say after that beatdown And, you know, Mel is such an optimist. He understands, too, because you have to put this in perspective, folks. I don't want Spartan fans out there to panic, even though it is Rutgers, of all teams, that gave you that season-opening loss to begin the Mel Tucker era. It's still early, but that wasn't pretty. Okay, so you'll hear what Mel Tucker had to say. I'll briefly touch upon how the Michigan football team looked against Minnesota. Rocky start, but Michigan figured it out. And, man, they do have a lot of talent on that team. And then we'll have weekend winners for you. It's a catch-22 because if you are a Michigan State fan here in the area, well, chances are that you also root for the Detroit Football Lions. And the Detroit Lions, they always find ways to win games that they aren't supposed to win, right? They lose the ones that they're supposed to win, and they win the ones that they're not supposed to win. Riddle me that. But the Detroit Lions pulled off one epic come-from-behind win with under a minute left to play. Todd Gurley gifted Matthew Stafford one more chance at life in that matchup. And Matthew Stafford and the Detroit Lions offense fully took advantage of it, and now we are sitting here talking about a Detroit Lions win and the Detroit Lions being in the playoff hunt. How about that? How about that? I don't know how Detroit Lions fans are feeling right now. I've talked to a few of you guys, and now with that win over Atlanta, you're feeling like, all right, let's just go all in. Let's try and get as many wins as possible. All of the chatter about, you know, firing Matt Patricia, you know, Bob Quinn has to go. I'm wondering where you guys are now on that. Because I did hear, just based on, you know, a few of my homies who are Detroit Lions fans, you know, that talk got put on pause, has been put on pause at least for another week. So we'll talk Lions over Falcons. Also, I want to talk about a legend in the ring. He's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Well, I should say the octagon. Pretty amazing. He had a fight over the weekend on Saturday. And he is deciding to walk away from the sport now after that win. I want to add him to my weekend winners, all right? So a lot to get to on this very, very busy Monday edition of Current Sports as week one of the Big Ten football season is in the books now. So we'll talk plenty of MSU football. We'll talk Detroit Lions and more. If you would like to be a part of the show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That's the number that you can call and leave us a voicemail at. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. Leave us a comment anywhere there on our Facebook page. And you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. You know what's next? Here are your quick hit headliners. All right, I want to start here because the playoffs have been now set by the Michigan High School Athletic Association in the world of high school football, and I want to give you guys a look at the matchups for district play for Greater Lansing football teams, all right? So in Division I, District 2, you've got Ann Arbor Pioneer at Saline, Ann Arbor Huron at Kalamazoo Central, and Grand Ledge will be playing host to Kalamazoo Loy Norix, and Holt will be playing host to Ann Arbor Skyline. All right, in Division II, District 10, East Lansing at 6-0, a perfect 6-0 record. They are now on a bye. Also, in that same division, same district, Okemos at 0-6 will be at Battle Creek Lakeview. All right, in Division III, District 20, you've got Jackson Northwest at DeWitt, St. John's at Lansing Waverly, Ionia at Mason, Hazlitt at Fowlerville. In Division 4, District 25, Escanaba at Alma. And in District 29, you've got Owosso at Williamston Lake Fenton at Charlotte, Eaton Rapids at Battle Creek, Penfield, and in District 5, Division 5, District 36, Lake Odessa, Lakewood at Portland. In District 37, you've got Berrien Springs at Lansing Catholic. And in District 39 of Division 5, you've got Ovid Elsie at Almont and Birch Run at Corunna. In Division 6, District 46, Stockbridge will be at Brooklyn Columbia Central. And in Division 7, District 51, Lakeview at Ithaca, Hesperia at Pawama Westphalia. In District 53 of Division 7, you've got Langsburg, who is on a bye, and Perry will be on the road at Bath. In District 56 there, you've got Leslie at Monroe St. Mary Catholic Central. Moving on to Division 8, District 59, Fulton at Fowler, Saranac at Potterville. In Division 8, District 62, Morency at Dansville. Then we move to 8-player D1, Kingston at Morris. That's in Region 3. 8-player D2, Ashley at Peck in Region 3. And in Region 4, last but certainly not least, of 8-player Division 2 football, North Adams Jerome will be at Portland St. Pat. So those are all of the local Greater Lansing Area High School football team district matchups this week. Crazy, right? I mean, you know, those weeks just flew by of the regular season, and now we're talking about postseason high school football. All right, folks. So there you have that. All right. Also want to give you guys a winter update concerning the Michigan High School Athletic Association. They have come out and provided a bit of an update as to what's going to happen when it comes to winter sports. And they released this initial winter sports protocol on Friday, while also teasing a final decision on high school football finals, which will be released in a few days, basically. The next few days is what they said. The Michigan High School Athletic Association football finals have been held at Ford Field each year since the venue opened, but because of the coronavirus pandemic this season, no final decision has been made on that venue and whether or not Ford Field will be the host of the 2020 finals the first weekend of December. Now, Northern Michigan University's Superior Dome has been the host site for 8-player finals since 2017, but a site has yet to be determined for this year's finals. 11-player semifinal games will be hosted by the top-seeded team. I want to let that be known. That's according to the MHSAA's playoff point system. However, if the distance using Apple Maps between the two semifinal schools is 200 miles or more, the MHSAA will assign that game a prearranged site if one can be secured in a reasonable location. Additionally, the MHSAA has given clearance for all winter sports to begin as scheduled, while giving school districts the option to delay the start of winter sports practices or competition and reduce the number of regular season competitions. No changes to published MHSAA tournament dates are currently proposed. So there you have that. Clearance for all winter sports to begin as scheduled, but individual school districts do have the option to delay due to COVID concerns. All right, to the Detroit Lions now. In a battle of the two NFL teams best known for their epic collapses, it was only fitting that both the Detroit Lions and Atlanta Falcons squandered fourth quarter leads. This was true to the essence of what these teams have been here in 2020. Matthew Stafford, he sidestepped the sack with no time on the clock, found T.J. Hockenson streaking across the front of the end zone for the tying touchdown. And Matt Prater, he put the babies to bed, making a 48-yard extra point after an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty actually moved things back. But the Lions win their second straight, 23-22, the final yesterday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The Lions come back, another in a series of heartbreaking late-game losses for the Falcons. was the culmination of a wild final few minutes that saw the lead change hands three times, folks, in the final 3 minutes and 16 seconds. Matthew Stafford completed 25 of 36 passes for 340 yards and one touchdown, and Kenny Golladay had six catches for 114 for the Lions. Kenny Golladay, folks, was big time. Pay that man. Pay that man. All right, and just got this news this morning. Very unfortunate news for Cleveland Browns fans out there and just fans of the NFL, because I love watching this dude play. Odell Beckham Jr., his season is officially over. The Browns announced that the star wide receiver suffered a torn ACL in his left knee. Beckham underwent an MRI this morning, which confirmed the tear. He was injured on the Browns' second snap yesterday while attempting to chase down a Cincinnati Bengals defender following a Baker Mayfield interception. Since being traded from the New York Giants in March of 2019, Beckham's tenure with the Browns has been marred by injuries. He suffered a hip and groin injury during training camp, if you remember, last year, which hampered him through the season. He finished with more than 1,000 yards receiving but had only four touchdown catches. Beckham had surgery in January to repair that injury. This season, he caught 23 passes for 319 yards and had three touchdowns. He also rushed three times for 72 yards and another score, one of those scores being against my Dallas Cowboys. I believe that performance against my Cowboys was the best performance that Beckham Jr. has had in his tenure with the Browns. But unfortunate news, because Beckham has been battling injuries for a while now, and you know, you just hate to see such a stud player in the league, a player that everybody enjoys watching if you are a fan of the game. You just hate to see a player like of his caliber go down. All right, Clayton Kershaw beat the Tampa Bay Rays for the second time in 6 days, escaping a fourth inning jam with a quick reaction throw to cut down a runner trying for a rare steal of home, and the Dodgers hold on for a 4-2 win and now have a 3-2 game World Series lead. Mookie Betts and Corey Seager sparked a two-run first inning, and Jock Peterson and Max Muncy homered off long ball prone Tyler Glasnow, whose 100 mile per hour heat got burned. 30 of the previous 46 teams to win Game 5 to get a 3-2 lead have won the title, but just 6 of the last 14. So, all hope is not lost for Tampa Bay fans out there. Teams that wasted 3-2 leads include last year's Houston Astros. Game 6, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. And yes, let's address it. Save it for last because it wasn't a recent update, but by now you know that the Michigan State football team was beaten by Rutgers. Isaiah Pacheco, he ran two first-half touchdowns, and Rutgers snapped a 21-game Big Ten losing streak on Saturday, beating Michigan State 38-27. In Coach Greg Schiano's first game back with the Scarlet Knights, Michigan State has a new coach, too, and Mel Tucker's debut was forgettable from the start. The Spartans turned the ball over, count them, 7 times, 4 in the first half, and never led against a Rutgers team that hadn't won a conference game since November 4th of 3 years ago in 2017 against Maryland. The Scarlet Knights scored 14 points total through their first 5 Big Ten games last year. It took them 8:03 to reach that mark on Saturday. Pacheco, he strolled in from 12 yards out to cap the game's opening drive. Then Michigan State receiver Jaden Reed, he fumbled the ball away on his team's first offensive play, and that was the first of many, many turnovers. Again, count them, 7. Making the fourth start of his career, redshirt junior QB Rocky Lombardi threw for a career-high 319, completed 31 of 44 passes for 3 touchdowns. And in his first game wearing the green and white, redshirt sophomore Reed had 11 catches for 128 yards, 2 scores, becoming the first Spartan to record 100 yards receiving in his debut. Reed, he transferred from Western Michigan, sat out 2019. Redshirt sophomore Jalen Naylor, he hauled in a career-best 6 catches for 84 yards, including a 30-yard touchdown in the third quarter. Spartans have a lot of improving to do heading into this weekend's matchup, a Saturday afternoon matchup against in-state rival Michigan. Michigan opens up as a 24-point favorite. Yes, I'll say that again. Michigan opens up as a 24-point favorite to top Michigan State this weekend. That's huge. More on that in just a moment. Speaking of Michigan, the number 18th ranked University of Michigan football team opened up the year with a 49-24 victory over number 21 Minnesota on Saturday night at TCF Bank Stadium, behind 481 yards of total offense. That offense hummed loudly on Saturday evening. Now, with the win, the Wolverines keep the Little Brown Jug for the third consecutive season and the 73rd time in program history. The Wolverines featured a balanced offensive attack with 225 yards in the air and 256 on the ground. Junior QB Joe Milton made his first career start, completing 15 of 22 for 225, 2 touchdowns, 1 passing, 1 rushing, and adding career highs in carries, 8, and rush yards, 52. Junior Hassan Haskins, he scored touchdowns on consecutive Michigan possessions and rushed for a team-best 82 yards, including a 66-yard run in the third quarter, while junior Ronnie Bell led the Wolverines with 74 receiving yards. That's why Michigan right now is a 24-point favorite to beat Michigan State come this weekend. Two different performances in those opening games for Michigan State and Michigan. All right, and last but certainly not least, this is a layered story and a bit unexpected. Arizona has been charged with 9 rules violations by the NCAA, including 5 level 1 allegations. This could lead to massive sanctions against the school's athletic department, especially the men's basketball program, among the level 1 allegations, according to sources. Sean Miller, for violating head coach control responsibility, and a lack of institutional control charge against the athletic department as a whole. Penalties could include multi-year postseason bans and a full season suspension for Miller. The news was first reported Sunday by The Athletic, citing a letter from Arizona outside counsel Paul Kelly to the NCAA Committee of Infractions. The Athletic story also notes a head coach control charge against Arizona swimming coach Augie Bush. According to the NCAA penalty matrix, a level 1 violation with aggravating circumstances can lead to a postseason ban of 2 to 4 years. A standard level 1 violation can produce a postseason ban of 1 to 2 years. According to the Athletic's reporting, NCAA enforcement is seeking the application of aggravated circumstances. A head coach found to have committed a level 1 violation could be suspended for 50% to 100% of a season with aggravated circumstances, according to the penalty matrix. A standard violation that will result in a suspension of 30% to 50% of the season. So, in tomorrow's current sports, I'm going to dive into what these allegations could specifically be. But as you see, these are very, very serious. All right, folks, let's hit our first break. When we come back, I'll give my thoughts on Michigan State and Rutgers, what it means for the Spartans moving forward. You're here from head coach Mel Tucker. That and more, you are listening to the Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. And would the Michigan State football fandom congregation please come to the altar? Because we need to talk. We need to address a few things here. All right. Number one, I want to say this. Don't panic. Don't panic. I know a 38-point output by one of the worst teams in the Big Ten Conference, that's ugly. It is not pretty at all, folks. Not pretty at all. But this is Mel Tucker's first game. It's in a year that is so different due to COVID-19, due to how late in the hiring process Michigan State football had to put things in motion due to the fact that Mark D'Antonio left the week of signing day. I just keep bringing it up. It just the circumstances around Mel Tucker's hiring are just odd. So I don't want you to panic because it is just game one. And who knows? You know, maybe this Rutgers team is going to prove to be a bugaboo for a lot of teams out there, not just Michigan State. That's what you want to hope right now, because the lens in which we were viewing Rutgers prior to that game on Saturday afternoon at Spartan Stadium, the lens in which we viewed Rutgers was one in which we perceived them to be the laughingstock that they have been pretty much the entire time that they've joined the Big Ten Conference. But under Greg Schiano, this Rutgers team was a team that was ranked a few times in the AP Top 25. They had a few upsets. That won a few big games that were pretty good. They were pretty solid under Greg Schiano. And now that he's back, this could be a different team, folks. I think they already are a different team. I mean, anytime you come out the gates and beat Michigan State the way you did on Saturday, this is a different team. And it's game one under Mel Tucker. I don't want you guys to panic because it is just one game, even though that one game was very tough to watch. Number two, I want to say, if you take away the Michigan State turnovers, Michigan State wins, I think. You know, Rocky Lombardi noted after the game, when we were talking to him in the virtual press conference, and by the way, it was a weird day at Spartan Stadium because you don't have any fans, you don't have any cheerleaders, Zeke the Wonder Dog isn't running around catching Frisbees in his mouth, Sparty isn't there slapping high fives, no student section, it was just family and friends, a limited number of family and friends in the stands on Saturday afternoon. Weird atmosphere. After the game, us media members, we don't get a chance to interview the players in person because of COVID concerns. All this is due to the coronavirus. So everything was virtual. You had like two Zoom links you got to hit because some players are going to be available on one and others on the second one. Just a weird, 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 weird time. But you know, going back to my point, I mean, the turnovers, folks. You know, I don't care who you're playing. Whether it's Rutgers or Alabama, if you turn the ball over seven times, the chances of you losing, it's got to be in the high 90s. Got to be. 95, 96, 97% chance you're going to lose. Jaden Reed, he is a talent. I like Jaden Reed a lot. Looking at what he was able to do, you can see that he is explosive. You know, I get the excitement around him now. But you gotta protect the football, young man. When you get your hands on that pigskin, put it away. And he didn't. And he contributed greatly, including the first offensive play of the game for Michigan State. He contributed greatly to the turnover problem. The offensive line is still not good. Have to note that. You know, I think Michigan State got decent play from Rocky Lombardi. The pass game was decent when he was able to get time. But, and that's saying a lot because there was no run game because there was no offensive line dominance. Michigan State got dominated in the trenches by that Rutgers defensive line. Really bad afternoon, folks. Really, really bad afternoon, especially when you consider the fact that the Scarlet Knights haven't exactly had dominant fronts over the years. If that offensive line does not get better and not open things for that run game, which featured Connor Hayward, you got to block better. By the way, that was another turnover problem. Connor Hayward not picking up a block. Rocky Lombardi getting blindsided, fumble. Same thing with Elijah Collins. Got to be better than that. So the offensive line has to play better. Going back to Rocky Lombardi, Rocky Lombardi was better than expected, though. You know, you hear how he talks to after the game. He's got great leadership qualities. I see why Mel Tucker and that staff went with him. You combine that with the fact that he had experience, which I told you, Rocky Lombardi was going to be your starter. I thought that we would see more than one quarterback, though. But, you know, leadership, he's got a strong arm. Accuracy is an issue, but that's expected. As expected. I think he outperformed many people's expectations for him in that game. No one, if somebody would have told you that Rocky Lombardi was going to throw anywhere near 300 yards before that game, you would have laughed. You would have laughed. Let's be real here. But he did. He finished with 319 yards passing. Three touchdowns, 31 of 44, kept the ball moving really all afternoon. You know, and sure, there were some really bad misses on wide open receivers. I counted one to Jalen Naylor and one to Jaden Reed. But, you know, he was serviceable, and I think he's got some room to get better. All right. I also want to say this. I thought that Michigan State's play calling was solid in some instances, but could have been better. We still saw a lot of like these short little dink and dunks. And I would have liked to have seen more creativity from Jay Johnson and his other offensive personnel coaches. Really from Jay Johnson, though. I mean, I would have liked to have seen that. I would have liked to have seen more creativity. But bottom line here, again, I don't care who you're playing. If you turn the ball over seven times, I mean, geez, you're going to lose. You're going to lose, man. You know, you had a muffed punt return by Jalen Naylor in the fourth. That led to a back-breaking touchdown, giving Michigan State really it was going to be an uphill climb to come back in that game. And Rocky Lombardi also, I'll say this, going back to Rocky Lombardi, because I know some people are saying this, he has to get better when it comes to the chemistry between him and his receivers. I don't know whose fault it was, but Rocky was not on the same page with his receivers, a few of them, and one of those miscommunications led to a horrible interception, which led to a score, sealing the win for Rutgers. That can't happen, man. Can't happen. So you got to get reps with your receivers and make sure that whatever play you call, you know what the route is and that receiver knows what his route is. And now you play Michigan this week. Michigan looked awesome against Minnesota. They look like they have a lot of talent. Again, it's just one game. You know, I'm not trying to solve the Rubik's Cube in one game here because things change week to week. But the contrasting difference in how Michigan State played against Rutgers and how Michigan played against Minnesota is glaring. Michigan State will get back to work and we'll see what happens, though. But my and again, I'll elaborate more on this in tomorrow's Current Sports. My overall thoughts about this win for Rutgers in the eyes of Spartan fans out there and how you should feel. I'm going to tell you how you should feel right now, all right? It should concern you that you lost to Rutgers, yes. But it's just game one. And if Michigan State takes care of the football, if you just have three turnovers in that game, I think you win, Spartan fans. That gives you some kind of hope here, all right? And I do believe that this Rutgers team is pretty talented. A much better Rutgers team that we've seen than we've seen in years past. Greg Schiano may have something here. I'm not saying they're going to go out and win the Big Ten. No. But that is a much better Rutgers team than we've seen in years past. Because, and you know, I heard the announcers make this point. Matt Millen was on with my former mentor, Lisa Byington. Shout out to Lisa. Did a great job one Sunday. Matt Millen was making the point that, you know, a lot of this Rutgers roster has been put together with those who hit the transfer portal. Talented players who are, you know, not pleased with their situation at said university and have said, you know what, I'm going to hit the transfer portal and see what else is out there. And Rutgers has done work in the transfer portal. They have talent there. So we'll see how the season unfolds. But right now, I want to play for you what Mel Tucker had to say after this loss. Here is the virtual press conference of Mel Tucker just moments after that Michigan State loss to Rutgers.
Turnover margin is the largest determining factor in winning and losing games, college and pro. And we talk about it all the time, the ball, the ball, the ball. You know, taking care of the football and taking the ball away on defense. And you turn the ball over seven times, you know, it's gonna be tough to beat anyone. You're not going to be able to beat good teams. You're not going to be able to beat any teams when you do that. And, you know, I also would like to give Greg Schiano and Rutgers, give them credit. You know, give them credit where credit is due. They did what they had to do. They made enough plays. They played hard for 60 minutes, and they out-executed us. But, yeah, I was disappointed in that. We were all disappointed. But those are all things that are correctable. We'll go back to the drawing board.
We'll go out to Lindsey Huddleston for the next question.
Yeah, tough loss, Coach. Somewhat of a follow-up to the first question. How much can you contribute to the mental aspects of the game compared to the technical aspects? Are those one and the same for you right now?
Yeah, well, they go hand in hand. You know, a lot of the game is mental. Even though this is a very physical game. But, you know, our mental disposition towards competing, you know, I saw our guys, they continued to play, you know, for 60 minutes, continued to fight and you know, work to score and get stops and things like that. You know, and so, you know, that's a good sign. And, you know, there was energy, you know, there was fire. You know, there was want to on the field, on the sideline, and in the locker room after the game. You know, there's passion, you know, there's desire, and there was a football character about this team that I do appreciate. You know, they take coaching, they work hard, and when you do those types of things, you know, good things are going to happen. We have to stay with our process, okay? We have to correct our mistakes. And because our guys are coachable, we respect them. They respect our staff. We will be able to make those corrections, and we will be able to improve. And, you know, that's going to start right away. And, our guys understand that. And so I'm looking forward to watching this film. You know, seeing where we need to improve, making those corrections, you know, and getting ready for Michigan.
Great. Thank you, Coach.
Yeah, thank you, Lindsey.
For our next question, we'll go to Matt Charbonneau with the Detroit News.
Mel, I was curious how you would gauge the play of Rocky, the way he played today. And not only that, the inability really to kind of establish the run early on, how much that affected you as well.
Yeah, you know, first, and offensively, our philosophy is we want to be able to run the ball on our terms. And we weren't able to do that today. And so, you know, that makes it tough because when you're somewhat one-dimensional, you know, it's hard to be successful. You know, I thought Rocky did some good things out there. I mean, if you look at his, you know, if you look at his stats, you know, 31 for 44, you know, 319, three touchdowns. I mean, that's pretty good production. I know there was a turnover early in the game, but, you know, we'll have to watch the film. I think there was some miscommunication there. And obviously at the end, he's trying to make a play. And so, you know, I think he showed really good leadership in this game. He continued to play the next play. He played tough. He played physical. And he continued to fight. And so, he's going to, just like the rest of the players, he's going to continue to improve. We're going to coach him just like we coach the rest of these guys on some of the mistakes that they made. And then we'll work to get better this week.
All right, folks, let's hit our final break. Again, you just heard the thoughts of Mel Tucker. Moments after the Michigan State loss to Rutgers, again, game two, it is rivalry week. We've got a spooky Halloween matchup between in-state rivals Michigan and Michigan State out at the Big House this Saturday afternoon. Michigan getting that win over Minnesota. Michigan State trying to lick its wounds and rebound against Michigan. We'll see what happens. We'll have more on that on tomorrow's Current Sports. But let's hit our final break. When we come back, we'll have weekend winners for you, and I'll give you my thoughts on the Detroit Lions topping the Atlanta Falcons. What a finish that was. We'll be right back. You are listening to the Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and the Detroit Lions, folks. Just a quick weekend winners for you guys as we bring it on home here. And I have further thoughts on the Lions beating the Atlanta Falcons on tomorrow's Current Sports. But I've got two weekend winners for you. One, the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions, say what you will about them. Say what you will, and I know. There are some Detroit Lions fans out there who are saying to themselves, this is not what we want. We want to lose every game from here on out. We want to enter our name into the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, rebuild this team, get Bob Quinn out of here, fire Matt Patricia. We can't do that if we're winning games. But you did. And say what you want. The Lions, they're on a win streak. How about that? The Detroit Lions are on a win streak. With that improbable win over the Atlanta Falcons yesterday, they have now beaten the Jaguars and the Falcons two games straight. And come this Sunday, to open up November, they will play the Indianapolis Colts. So we all thought this game was over. Todd Gurley, who is reportedly, quote, mad as heck, because Todd Gurley could have fell on the 1 yard line, but he accidentally crossed the plane with the football and gave Detroit just a little under a minute left to get the ball back and pull off a miracle. And look, that Matthew Stafford, it is why Matthew Stafford was on the lips of many just, you know, a couple years ago for the MVP race, which is why many believe he is going to go down, and he is going to go down as the greatest Detroit Lions quarterback of all time. The amount of fourth quarter comeback victories that he has had, you know, it tagged the Lions the name of the nickname, the Cardiac Cats, a few years ago, if you remember. That Matthew Stafford can still pull off some magic. and he did yesterday. Under a minute left, put together one remarkable drive. Found Kenny Golladay multiple times throughout that game yesterday. Kenny Golladay, yeah, pay that man a new contract, please. Throw him some cheese, because 6 catches for 114, that was remarkable. And he is so consistent week in and week out for the Detroit Lions. But that final drive was amazing. And it was capped by Matthew Stafford doing what he does. I mean, that final play just kind of puts in perspective who Matthew Stafford is. Avoiding a sack, on the run, eyes stand downfield, delivering a laser to Detroit Lions tight end T.J. Hockenson. Game over. Well, not completely, because the Detroit Lions did... They did not make it easy on Matt Prater, who actually missed a kick earlier in the game. An unsportsmanlike conduct penalty moved the ball back a bit, but Matthew Prater finished the deal. But amazing, right? Matthew Stafford was brilliant in that final minute, and Todd Gurley basically gifted the Lions a win. So, with that being said, the Lions are in the playoff hunt still. and why I include them in my weekend winners. Also, my second weekend winner goes to Khabib Nurmagomedov. If you don't know who Khabib is, he is one of the best mixed martial arts fighters in the game's history. Tears streamed down his eyes on Saturday. And it was just really tough because this was Khabib's first fight since his father and head coach passed away in July due to complications of COVID-19, which, again, is a sobering reminder of just how serious COVID-19 is. His father died due to the coronavirus, and this was his first fight since that. He submitted Justin Gaethje, who many said that this would be Khabib's toughest test, via a triangle choke at 1 minute 34 seconds of the second round while fighting with a broken foot on Saturday in the main event of UFC 254 in Abu Dhabi. Did it with a broken foot. That's according to President Dana White. He's 32 years old. He said his mother did not want him to compete without his father, but he told her this would be his last fight, saying afterwards, quote, "I promised her this was going to be my last fight. If I give my word, I have to follow this." And he put the finishing touches on his career as he took Gaethje down. It unified. That victory unified the UFC lightweight title. And he said he has no interest in fighting the winner of a proposed January bout between Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. So, man, he posted a message later on his Instagram thanking his father. And just a really emotional moment. A really legendary moment. So, shout out to Khabib. If that is, in fact, your last fight, you know, you will be missed, my man. And thoughts and prayers to your family as you continue to heal from the loss of your father due to the coronavirus. This thing is still so real, folks, and the numbers are going up in our nation yet again, and no, it's just still getting out of hand. So, and actually, I saw today that Jaguars running back Rykel Armstead is expected to miss the season due to COVID-19 complications. Yeah, he suffered from respiratory issues and has been hospitalized twice after contracting the coronavirus. So, again, this thing affects people differently. I mean, Armstead is 23 years old. He entered the season as the Jags' second most experienced back on the roster. Healthy dude. Fifth-round pick in 2019. 23. Hospitalized twice after getting the coronavirus. Be careful, be safe, folks. We'll see you on the Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Much love. Be easy, people.